It's Sam Cedar. Introducing whiny ass teeny baby conservatives to the truth. Wow, wow, conservatives. That's you crying. The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.
It is Wednesday, February 9th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Another great program for you today. We'll be welcoming to the program Catherine Gallagher, Center for Constitutional Rights, on the indictment they have filed in Switzerland on behalf of two torture victims, torture victims of the American torture policy, against former President George W. Bush, and it actually kept him from going to Switzerland. We will talk to her more about that very interesting story and very interesting initiative. Frankly, I hope that guy is not allowed to go more than, 20 blocks from whatever place in Houston or Dallas or wherever he's living these days, which is probably would suit his intellectual curiosity just fine. Anywhere I can go just to make sure that Laura doesn't see me drink. I don't care. I just need a man cave. If I get in my man cave, I don't care. A reminder, in 1 week, on the 15th or 16th of this month, we will be sequestering the post show. I know many of you want to get in so that you do not miss one day of the full hour and a half broadcast of The Majority Report. First 40 minutes are great, but you can't believe, if you don't listen to what happens in the next 50 minutes, you have no idea. You have no idea how crazy it can get. And remember, justcoffee.coop, every time you go there and buy coffee or tea or chocolate and you use the coupon code MAJORITY, we get a little kickback. That's right. We make a little money on that. It's not just, we don't promote justcoffee.coop simply because it's great coffee and simply because I don't drink tea, but I assume it's good tea as well. And chocolate, indulged, done it. And because it's all fair trade and because it's a co-op, so the guys that you're actually, who are servicing you, own the company. Everybody gets a little piece there. We do it because they're sponsoring us. Also, you can go to donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm. Sign in with Twitter. You can trust it. It's Kyle who has set this thing up, and it's already exploding. This technology is already exploding across the Twitter sphere, as it were. And you can allow us to retweet once a day via your account, or once a week, or once a month. I think we have already now 85 gold members who, and we broadcast, basically just today on the show, or sometimes if we have something even better to do. So that's the type of things we do. We won't abuse it. We won't be putting spam through there, buy penis extenders or whatever it is. And also, you can buy stuff through our Amazon link. Our book and movie page is live, and I think on that page we'll also, put the general link up there where you can buy any products, and we get a little kickback on that. Not huge, but enough. And please, if you want to contact the show or send us guest suggestions, you can contact us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And again, if you have any trouble, and frankly, it's distressing to see how many people out there who are really living on the brink right now. But if you have any economic, are you if you have are going through difficult financial times, and you want to listen to the entire show, please email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll work something out. The one of the most gratifying things about doing this for me is that it, you know, people like to be informed, and hopefully it's entertaining. And the idea that I can provide an hour and a half of entertainment a day for people who otherwise are just cash strapped. I've got people who just like canceled my cable, canceled Netflix. People who are saying, you know, I'm going through a period right now where I have to cut back on some food products. You know, if in some way being able to listen to this show on a daily basis, whether it's on your computer or if you have, you know, some way of podcasting it, even if you don't or you do it live, whatever it is, if it's very gratifying to me. So, and we've had people and continue to get people who are offering to sponsor members anonymously. So if you're interested in doing that, email me as well. We'll hook you up with a, you know, you can double your membership, or we'll give you a discounted rate on a second membership to sponsor these people. That's great. But we're going to do it either way. All right, let's turn to Egypt. I'm going to read off some tweets because things are moving very quickly there. About 3 hours ago, remember, Egypt is about 6 or 7 hours ahead of us. Ben Wiederman from CNN said that labor unrest is spreading like wildfire. There are reports of general strikes going across the country now. 1,500 dock workers here, 300 mine workers there. Tourism workers striking. You'll recall yesterday I was talking about that interview that Google guy, Ghanem, had given on Egyptian TV. And apparently the guy inspired literally hundreds of thousands of more Egyptians to go down to Tahrir Square. They are now outside of Tahrir Square. It's too crowded there. This is the biggest square in all of Egypt. And this kid, this 25-year-old kid, and as I scroll up on my tweets here, you're going to hear just how, just where this is going. Demonstrators, according to Juan Cole, broke new ground, spilling into arteries around Tahrir Square, taking up positions across from the parliament building. Newly appointed Vice President Omar Suleiman, our retail torturer in Egypt, said the calls for departure of President Hosni Mubarak were disrespectful and warned the demonstrators that Egypt could not go on with big rallies every day. Good luck for him. It's disrespectful. You're being rude to ask for your rights. It's rude. It's rude to do that. We are also now seeing indications that there's a revolt taking place in all the state-run newspapers by journalists against their editors. Oh, wow. We are now seeing Nile TV carrying parts of Al Jazeera, which was supposedly made verboten a week ago. Schools and universities remain closed next week. Midterm break extended, according to Ben Wiederman on Twitter. Tomorrow, a protest in front of the lawyer syndicate at 12, where victims tortured under detention will talk of their experiences. Coming off of Twitter, again, you know, to follow, I have two lists, Egypt lists, on my Twitter feed. I will make my second one actually public. And you can go to my Twitter at Sam Cedar, and also we'll put this on Majority Report. We'll follow those, Majority FM. We'll follow those Twitter feeds, okay? Dorsey will do this after the program today. Ghanem, he's tweeting. I made a full interview with CNN yesterday, responding to General Omar Suleiman interview with Amanpour. 1 hour ago, protest in downtown, block traffic, no police, workers forced uncooperative union official to leave. Just incredible, says Manal. Egypt workers blocking traffic in the Ramses. Laura Gibley, an hour ago, hearing reports that government planning to unleash thugs on protesters at Parliament within the coming hours. Protesters now telling others there are plans to march to the presidential palace on Friday. That's where it's going to get really hairy. Muslim Brotherhood has announced that it will not participate in negotiations with the government and says that they will uphold the youth's demands. This is a youth protest that started on Facebook. It's almost too fantastical to really absorb, particularly when in this country, you know, youth protests tend to be bring Snooki back or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't know. Muslim Brotherhood, we are not the majority and we will not be the majority. We want to be part of the political process, not take over. Go NIM again. We're hoping that Friday of Martyrs will be the world's largest funeral to bid well to the 300 Egyptians who have died in this protest. Ivan CNN, he is a producer there. An exclusive CNN interview, while Go NIM says this is no longer the time to negotiate with Egyptian government. Too much blood spilled. He has notarized power of attorney this morning, giving his wife control of his assets. Says he's ready to die to bring change to Egypt. The guy's 25 years old. It's just, it's impressing and moving. The police cracking down brutally on the people in Karga, Wadi El Gedid province. Live ammunition is being used on a wide scale. This is outside of Cairo. Shalid Hamid says, was at the Muslim Brotherhood press conference earlier. Muslim Brotherhood, like the rest of opposition, seems to have no clear sense of next steps. You know, this seems to have been made up, constructed as they went along. Let's hear a dispatch. Do we know when this came from?
This is from earlier. This is from before the general strikes. The things aren't dated here, but I get the sense that it was from possibly yesterday.
Okay. This is a dispatch from Cairo from audio dispatches via this Twitter mechanism, Twitterm. Let's listen to this. It's 2 minutes long. It's an Egyptian surgeon discussing what it feels like to walk into Tahrir Square as the protests continue.
My name is Dr. Yahya Nuruddin Tarraf. I'm a professor of pediatric orthopedic surgery in Cairo University. When I went through the checkpoints into the square, it was as if I have crossed the borders into an Egypt that was quite different from that I have just left behind. There were all kinds of walks of life there, the very rich and the poor, the Christians and Muslims, the young and the old, men and women, the veiled and otherwise. If there is one thing Mubarak has managed to do, It was as he has united the Egyptian people against him, of course. If you have any doubts about protesting further, you come to Tahrir Square, you may find that you are unable to leave. I found the Egyptians there were all united behind one single purpose and chanting for the welfare of the country. And I assure you that if you consider this the large turnover, because when I was leaving, there were thousands still coming into the square. During the past few days, I assure you that more than 10 million people have already attended this rally for democracy. My wife went today. My daughter has been going now for 3 days. All my friends and all my colleagues today, they went. All the universities went today. The whole sector of the Egyptian society is... It's a free part of Egypt. The square is, you can call it really the Republic of Tahrir. It is the free Egypt that we want. And in Tahrir Square, I felt that I was really proud being an Egyptian. And you can see in the eyes of all the reporters there that they really admired the spirit of the Egyptian people. Now, the young people made the change, but the whole country is rallying behind them now. standing behind them, and I think Egypt has changed. The time will never go backwards. And whatever the outcome of this revolution, I think Egypt will pick up the momentum, and the change is imminent. Egypt has shown the whole world that Egyptians they can tolerate injustice for a few years, but not forever.
And so we will keep you abreast. As always, later this week we are trying to get one of any number of people to talk to us, to give us an update on what's happening in Egypt. This just come across the wires. Jim Webb, senator from Virginia, will not seek re-election. This is a pretty big loss, if only because... you know, Jim Webb came in with a very clear sense that he wanted to become a Democrat. And he had become a Democrat. You know, he had been Reagan's undersecretary of the Navy, or secretary of the Navy, I should say. And he became a Democrat because he felt that the Democrats had a tradition of fighting for the middle class. He came in as an economic populist. And I think he was incredibly discouraged during his time in the Senate, to see that Democrats have lost that connection to the middle class and that support. And so it's both a symbolic loss and it's going to make it very difficult in Virginia, won't it? We need to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking to Catherine Gallagher of the Center for Constitutional Rights on the reason George Bush is afraid to visit Switzerland. I guess that's going to cut into his ability to pick up chocolates and maybe drop off bundles of money in Swiss bank accounts. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Catherine Gallagher is a senior staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights. Among the cases she's working on are Arar v. Ashcroft, Matar v. Dichter, Saleh v. Titan, and Estate of Audubon versus Blackwater. So there's both cases against former U.S. officials and military contractors. Welcome to the program, Catherine.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me today.
Now, you are the lead attorney in the Bush torture indictment that is taking place in Switzerland, as well as the torture cases in Spain. Let's start with Switzerland. There were reports over the past couple of days that George Bush was to attend a charity function or some function there, and that he canceled supposedly because of concern of safety. There was some reports that there was a handful of people who were going to show up holding their shoes to remind people of the protest that an Iraqi who threw a shoe at George Bush. But that wasn't really the real reason why he didn't go to Switzerland, was it?
Well, we do not believe it was the real reason. The demonstrations that you mentioned have been known for probably at least 10 days, if not 2 weeks. What was only becoming known right at the time that George Bush made the decision to cancel his trip was the fact that the Center for Const- Constitutional Rights, along with the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights, would be filing two criminal complaints on behalf of two individual plaintiffs in Geneva with the prosecutor on Monday morning, the 7th of February, which happens to be the anniversary of the day 9 years ago when George Bush said the Geneva Conventions do not apply. We had been working behind the scenes for about 2 weeks once we received notice that he would be traveling to Switzerland to build a coalition of support for these complaints and these individual plaintiffs. We had received more than 60 institutional sign-ons from human rights groups around the globe. We had received the support of two former special rapporteurs of the United Nations. We had a former special rapporteur on torture who had carefully examined the policies of the Bush administration write an expert opinion in support of the complaints. And all this was to be launched at a press conference after the filing Monday morning.
Now the idea behind this is that in this instance, because you're filing under the Convention Against Torture, is that right? The UN Convention Against Torture?
Yes, that is correct. Switzerland has a provision in its criminal procedure code, as it is mandated to do as a signatory to the Convention Against Torture, that if a person is present in Switzerland, that person who is alleged to be a torturer, that person will be examined. There will be a preliminary investigation to see whether a full prosecution is warranted as soon as that person enters Swiss territory. So we were planning to file these papers 5 days in advance with all the supporting materials in order to give the Geneva prosecutor sufficient time to make the determination of whether or not there was sufficient reason to open a preliminary investigation. And of course, we believe that there is more than necessary basis for such an examination.
Now, I mean, theoretically, the United States is also a signatory to the Convention Against Torture. Is that not right?
Indeed it is, and indeed we also have obligations under the Convention Against Torture. We also have an anti-torture statute, but unfortunately the Department of Justice has thus far been absolutely unwilling to open any kind of sufficient investigations, let alone prosecutions, of high-level Bush administration officials into the torture program.
Can you now, just to go back to, you were going to file 5 days in advance of Bush actually being in Swiss territory. Is this something that you could file in every country that has been a signatory to this convention, short of, I guess, the United States, who doesn't seem to want to comply to it, but file this so that it's essentially if George Bush lands in any given country, they would immediately start the investigation?
Yes, it is something that we could do. Now, states have different laws and different ways that they've implemented their obligations. Some states actually do not require the presence of the accused. That's the minimum obligation that you undertake under the Convention Against Torture. So we will be exploring our options over the coming weeks, months, and certainly keeping an ear out for any travel plans internationally that we hear that George Bush will be undertaking.
So I imagine that it is much more efficient in terms of getting the word out and much more promotionally, maybe that's the wrong word, but in terms of publicizing, you know, in reminding this country and other countries that there is reason for investigations, to do it when he makes the plans to go somewhere, right? I mean, because if you go and file in every country right now, he just won't make any plans to go anywhere.
Well, you know, there could be some prosecutors who would be willing to put in an extradition request. At this stage, we think that the best use of resources is to target a country where George Bush is present, and that may be here in the United States. But I would just, on the issue of whether this was promotional, I would just like to emphasize that this was very much a legal action.
Right. No. I wasn't suggesting,
yeah,
but there is value, I got to imagine. I mean, certainly insofar as, you know, look, I mean, if George Bush had never made this decision to cancel his trip because he was afraid that his visiting would trigger the investigation, we wouldn't have an opportunity to discuss it. And it's an important thing to discuss because going forward, we need to have some accountability for these people, whether they whether George Bush is found guilty or not guilty of these charges. It's important to set the record straight.
Yes, and that's part of what went into our decision-making over the weekend, to still proceed, not to put forward the actual criminal complaints, but to put forward this public indictment to educate people exactly what it is that we mean when we say that George Bush can be held liable under the Convention Against Torture, to lay out the many acts that he did, starting, of course, with his own admission in Decision Points that he authorized the waterboarding of at least three detainees and authorized the use of waterboarding as part of the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques used by the CIA in secret detention programs. That CIA secret detention program had been carefully reviewed by the International Committee of the Red Cross and the United Nations, both of which determined that this program in itself constitutes acts of torture because secreting people away, holding them incommunicado, subjecting them to horrific acts, including forced nudity, sleep deprivation, manipulation of food, and simply cutting them off from the outside world, in addition to the waterboarding, all of that constitutes acts of torture. So we feel there's value in putting out this legal analysis of George Bush's actions.
Can you approach state attorney generals or even district attorneys to file these type of charges, or is it only at a federal level that it would make sense for anybody to file these type of charges?
I think the starting point is the federal level because that's where we have the anti-torture statute. That's also where we have the War Crimes Act. Of course, the Center for Constitutional Rights and many of its allies have been calling for the appointment of a special prosecutor for many years. I think we will, again, be exploring options since we have this really a smoking gun admission from George Bush himself, and we've seen very little, actually no, reaction from Washington. President Obama said, let's look forward, not behind. And that is such a dangerous thing to say, such a dangerous approach, because when you allow impunity for torture, especially by such a prominent person as the former president of the United States with such a notorious program of torture, it allows the rule of law globally to be eroded. So I think President Obama is making a serious mistake in thinking that he can pursue a human rights agenda in other countries while leaving such a gaping hole in our own accountability here at home.
I want to talk more about that because I know you've worked on the Spanish cases, but I just want to stay on this one point. Is there any legal theories or principles in which one could find jurisdiction that a state attorney general or even a county district attorney would have a jurisdictional argument? Obviously the federal statute, is not within their jurisdiction, but perhaps there are statewide laws or in terms of,
I certainly wouldn't say that, that there definitely are not. There could be state laws, there could be local laws, as you said, that district attorneys could explore, where, again, you have issues there of personal jurisdiction where you would have to have links. I'm not going to rule that out as a possibility. And I think, again, it is worth exploring. Unfortunately, there it does take sometimes more political will, but we hope that by putting the information out, we can at least help a district attorney who is willing to look at this, and hopefully there are some, to be able to see that there is a very strong case to be made against George Bush.
Fair enough. Okay, and so you've been working on also the cases in Spain. Now, most of what I know from the cases that are being pursued in Spain have been essentially from cables released by WikiLeaks, that there are multiple cases that are ongoing in Spain or were ongoing, and the Obama administration essentially did everything they could with the help of envoys from this country to quash those cases. Please tell me about those cases and what their status are.
Sure. There are two cases that are currently pending in Spain at different phases. And exactly as you said, WikiLeaks has shown a whole new light on what's been happening behind the scenes. The case that was filed in March 2009 was filed against the so-called Bush Six. These are six lawyers from the Bush administration who helped to draft the legal memoranda in an attempt, we would say, to give legal cover for acts of torture.
So this would include John Yoo and Hayes and
Jay Bybee and Alberto Gonzalez, the former attorney general. So this case was initially scheduled to go to Balthazar Garzon, who is most well known for the Pinochet case. He is someone who has demonstrated a commitment and an understanding of the universal jurisdiction process. That case, in the end, went to a different judge, Judge Velasco. And Judge Velasco has had that case before him. He did not close it, despite what we see in the WikiLeaks cables. But what he has done is send three requests to the United States to ask whether or not they are looking into the allegations in the complaint before him. Interestingly, in an official way, there has been zero response. The United States has never responded to Judge Velasco's order.
Now, did he send that order because he was saying that if the implication being that if the United States is looking into this case, I will lay off until it's resolved?
Right. I mean, he might have made the determination that, look, if the United States, that's where this case is the most obvious place to be investigated and prosecuted. If they are going to be doing a thorough, independent, credible prosecution investigation of this case, then I will leave it to them to do that. He has asked three times, has heard nothing. And, of course, as we see through the WikiLeaks cables, exactly what you said, there were many, many meetings, many envoys sent, including Republican members of Congress, to speak with their Spanish colleagues to try and say, make this case go away. Judge Velasco has not dismissed the case, and he has recently given the United States a final deadline of March 1st to say whether or not they are investigating the Bush Six. At the same time, Judge Garzon did open a separate investigation. There are four individuals, one of whom is a Spanish citizen, one of whom is a Spanish resident, and two others who have links to Spain, who the Spanish courts had already found had been tortured at Guantanamo. So what Judge Garzon opened, and this is an open investigation at this stage, is an investigation into what happened to those four men. And Judge Garzon framed that investigation as potentially being far more broad than just those four individual men. So this investigation could go all the way up to George Bush. It certainly could go up to Donald Rumsfeld, who just released his memoirs yesterday. So, you know, that is an investigation to watch, and it remains open currently before a different judge, Judge Ruse.
Catherine Gallagher, senior staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, thank you so much for joining us. Would love to speak to you again, perhaps sometime in early March, to see what is happening in Spain.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Race hatred cannot stop us. This one thing I know: your poll tax and Jim Crow and greed have got to go. You're bound to lose. Are you fascists or bound to lose? Are you fascists or bound to lose? You fascists or bound to lose?
Is it safe?
You fascists or bound to lose?
Is it safe? Is it safe?
You know what? I got to get that for my 360. Marathon Man. Have you seen it?
No.
No, I haven't.
Of course not. Of course not. That movie came out before you were born, Evan. Can't believe it. Can't believe how old I'm getting. Interesting turn in the House last night. House Republicans Tuesday got a harsh introduction to the majority as more than two dozen rank-and-file GOP lawmakers voted against reauthorizing the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act was moved to the floor under suspension of the rules. That's where you need two-thirds. If you can get two-thirds vote on something in the House, you can suspend the rules, and that means no amendments, no debate, and is often used for non-controversial legislation so that they can just get it passed. But apparently they couldn't get the two-thirds vote.
Hey, what happened?
Well, I will tell you what happened. Glenn Greenwald has a little bit of commentary on it. 26 of the most conservative Republicans, including several of the newly elected Tea Party members, joined the majority of Democratic House members. That's the thing to keep in mind here, folks. We still have the majority of Democrats in the House voting against re-upping the Patriot Act. Because they're not patriotic, don't you know? And thus it felt seven votes short of the two-thirds needed. Glenn Greenwald warns us the significance of this event shouldn't be overstated. The proposed Patriot Act extension still commanded support from a significant majority of the House, 277 to 148, and will easily pass once the GOP leadership brings up the bill for a vote again in a few weeks under the standard procedure, which requires only majority approval. Greenwald points out that Rachel Maddow last night pointed to a split on the right, at least a rhetorical one, between what she called the authoritarian conservatives and the libertarian conservatives. It might be interesting to have Jonathan Weiler back on to discuss this. At some point, the dogmatic emphasis on limited state power, not trusting the federal government, and individual liberties, all staples of right-wing political propaganda, especially Tea Party sloganeering, has to, one would think, conflict with things like oversight-free federal domestic spending, surveillance, limited government detention powers, and impenetrable secrecy. You know, really, the real story here is, I mean, if we were living in a universe where the presumption would be that Tea Party people and Republicans weren't full of crap every time they opened their mouth, if we lived in a universe where that was not the presumption, the real story would be, how is it possible that any members of the so-called Tea Party caucus, how is it possible that any Republicans who went up and read that Constitution could have even contemplated voting for an extension of this? I mean, that would be the real story here. Not that there was 26 wayward Republicans who decided to show some iota of integrity. And of course, most of them probably voted against it because it had something to do with the health care reform. But that's if we were living in a universe that wasn't all effed up. But we're not. We're living in one where things like integrity and hypocrisy, and they're just words that end with a Y. That's all those things are. Now, Greenwald goes on to say there is precedent for this type of alliance between the left and the right in this regard. And you can see it in the audit the Fed and a couple other areas. At one point, we had Jane Hampshire on to talk about this transpartisan type of coalition. But he writes, both liberal and conservative ideology can and should sustain popular opposition to ongoing reductions in civil liberties. It's the political establishment, regardless of the party to which it belongs, that is incentivized to seize always greater levels of power in the name of security. Thus, when Barack Obama tries to quash, and his administration tries to quash an investigation into the torture policies of the Bush administration, that there's a prime example of it. So many, though not all, of our most consequential political disputes are far more about insider versus outsider than they are Democratic versus GOP. Which he says, Greenwald, is a simplistic dichotomy used to keep the populace divided over trivial disputes and thus too fractured to resist the corruption and repression of the bipartisan ruling class. Now, he is talking in the context of civil liberties, but I think you could make this argument in an increasing and distressingly increasing amount when it comes to things like redistribution of wealth upwards. And it's part of the reason why I think Jim Webb left the Senate, announced his resignation today. You know, when you see people like John Paulson, whose hedge fund essentially created a market not just for overlooking loans that were bad, but created a market for bad loans so that he could do a bet against those loans in the marketplace. He could short those loans. And this is a conversation I've been sort of saving to have someone on to talk about the Financial Crisis Commission report, which incidentally I interviewed Mike Consul from the Roosevelt Institute for Ring of Fire this week. So check out Ring of Fire Radio this weekend, Saturday, I think 3 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to the live stream on Ring of Fire Radio. So this is increasingly a very important dynamic, which is not to suggest that there's any partners necessarily in the Republican Party for us, but it is an important dynamic to keep in mind, that the real battle is insider versus outsider. And frankly, that's why, you know, I often have in the past criticized people like Lawrence O'Donnell. I think his ideological inclinations are, I appreciate. But I think he speaks from the inside out. And I'm far more interested in a conversation about speaking from the outside in. As he sits in his one-room freezing room where everyone's wearing sweaters and hats because it's so cold. With taped together microphones and cables that we actually stitch ourselves out of bamboo reeds.
All of these things are true.
He goes on to say, despite my belief that such an alliance is both tenable and necessary, last night's Patriot Act underscores the fact that I'm ultimately quite pessimistic about its ability to produce any meaningful benefits in the near future. Well, me too. Got a lot more stuff. There's some important abortion stories that we're going to cover in the members-only show. And also if you are someone who is inclined to believe the idea of peak oil, or in fact, if you're someone who is not inclined to believe the idea of peak oil, but you're aware of it, you may want to stick around for the post show, as WikiLeaks has uncovered a rather disturbing, just stick around. This is... get ready, folks. Important story. You can IM me on the other side, on the flip side, which I'm starting to like better. Someone has suggested the flip side instead of the B side. That way it's not so
secondary.
It's not so derogatory. It's the flip side, not the B side. So stick around on the flip side. You can IM me at Majority FM. And, folks, remember, we're going to be sequestering the post show. That's the show that's happening right after the musical break, starting in a week. So now is time to become a Majority Report member. $10 a month is the most expensive. And if you can't afford it, then email me. So you have no excuse. If you can't afford it, email me. Otherwise, it's just pure laziness. And you know what happens to lazy people. I guess you end up doing a podcast out of an office that is pretty cool. JustCoffee.coop. Head over there. Get some coffee, tea, chocolate. Put Majority into the coupon code. Donate your Twitter account, donateyourtwitteraccount.com/majorityfm. And don't forget, go visit our book page, find our Amazon link, buy all your products through our Amazon link. It's very easy to set up. And send me guest suggestions at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. I want to make one thing clear. We are not going to sequester the live feed. The live feed, if you're listening live, if you're watching on the Sammy Cam maybe someday we will sequester. We were talking about how to do that. We may have another way of doing that. But for now, and I would think for the coming months, Sammy Cam will not be sequestered for members only. And nor will the live feed. But there really is, if you're listening now and you're not a member, there really is no excuse for you. Because if you're too broke, send me an email. I certainly won't judge. You're talking to a guy who's basically cut off his cable. We're tightening our belt here because the government should tighten its belt. So we're tightening our belt. But no judgment. I'm going to trust that if you're a genuine hardship case, you'll email me and you'll tell me. Anybody who emails me is like, I'm a hardship. Can I get a free membership? And it's not a hardship. I'm too trusting. And too impressed, really, by the balls, frankly, that takes. Maybe we'll save the abortion story for tomorrow. Well, no, this is this one is really impressive. The Republicans. This is really shocking. Right now, you get tax incentives. Tax cuts, essentially, if you are an employer providing health care benefits. And the Republicans want to say that if those private. I mean, you know, this is so hypocritical. It is stunning. It is stunning. Republicans always say, the government should not be in any way trying to influence what industry does. The government should not meddle in private affairs. Keep big government out of decisions by individuals into what products they want to buy. Don't provide. It is so wrong to tax things like sugary sodas to try and get people to be more healthy. That's absolutely wrong. But if we're talking about our morality and our willingness to deny women sovereignty over their own bodies, all that's out the window. We will raise taxes on businesses that offer private insurance plans to their employees, that include abortion services.
Hey, what happened?
Yeah, what happened to your principles? What we are seeing is that the Tea Party movement is a joke. It's a lie. The Republicans in the House who have run as Tea Party candidates, they lied to their sucker followers. So, if I want to give the benefit of the doubt to the Tea Party folks, that it's not a good healthy dose of racism or Muslim phobia or whatever it is that causes 12 people out of 20 in a Frank Luntz Fox focus group to raise their hand when they think Obama's a Muslim yesterday. But if I want to have one brief moment, like some of these people who voted against the Patriot Act, if I want to have one brief moment of saying, these guys aren't full of crap, they're not complete liars, they're not duping these morons, well, here's a prime example of it. This Tea Party movement are the same people who said there was a culture war in 1992 led by Pat Buchanan. The same people. They'll suspend their beliefs in the Constitution. They'll suspend their beliefs in libertarianism. They'll suspend their beliefs in raising taxes and government interference in private affairs when it comes to imposing their moral and religious beliefs and misogyny on the rest of us. The idea that they would raise taxes on businesses that dare to offer any type of reproductive services to their employees through private insurance is just appalling. And I think it lays to rest the notion that there's any integrity in the Tea Party movement. And it's a massive tax increase, too, you should know. We'll dig more into that as we go, because it's appalling. No, it's not. It's not surprising to me, but unbelievable. Not unbelievable. You know, that's the thing, is I'm both amazed and like, oh, okay, yeah, sun showed up today. That's right, the sun comes up in the east. Oh, I forgot. I don't know what happened. I fell asleep last night, and somebody, I don't know, I took too much Ambien. I forgot, and I was surprised when I woke up in the morning the sun rose in the east. So WikiLeaks, you know, these oil companies, and you realize that it's not just when the Republicans and these oil companies come out against subsidizing oil companies, or discontinuing the subsidies of the oil companies, and when they really they try and delay our adoption and our development of sustainable economic practice, and when they come out and they say, you know, all of this is just about trying to impose socialism, and frankly, it is true that we're not going to be able to sustain this life. It's just not. I mean, we're not going to be able to. And then the question is, how do we reorganize? But when you begin to realize that they know we're going to hit a point of peak oil, and peak oil is not such a fantastical notion that, you know, it's not such a, it simply is that this is a finite resource, that because the Earth is only 10,000 years old or 6,000 years old, and only over that time, only so many dinosaurs could live amongst with men. And we all know that oil comes from just all the dead things, essentially. Not many things have had a chance to die over the 6 or 10,000 years. Or, frankly, the billions that we've really, really been around. But be that as it may, oil is a finite resource. The question is, how finite has always been the issue. I don't think there's anybody out there who would dispute the concept of peak oil, except for probably, you know, someone way on the far right. The question is, are we even remotely near it? That's really the issue. And that concept is that you reach a point in the amount of oil. And it was first developed by, I cannot remember the scientist's name, in 1970, when he said, suggested, or 1950. Was it Heller or, why don't you look it up? Peak oil. It was developed by a professor. He was a not a professor. He was a scientist who worked for one of the oil companies, and it was in like the mid-50s. And he, you know, at that time, America was the chief producer, the biggest, largest producer of oil in the world.
Are you thinking of Hubbard?
Hubbard.
M. King Hubbard.
And he came up with this theory of peak oil, that the U.S. would reach peak oil, I think, in the early 70s. And then U.S. production would continue to decline, and the cost of extracting this oil would exponentially grow with the difficulty of finding it. It's a fairly easy concept to understand. The question is, when will the world hit that peak oil? It's hit and passed in the United States, and which is why it's so much more expensive to drill in the United States, because there's less oil. You've got to go in more remote places to find it. You've got to go deeper down. And this notion of peak oil suggests that the world supplies has reached its peak, and there is no way to drive down the price of oil after you've reached peak. Now, maybe it's not, hasn't reached a year ago, or, you know, this isn't like it this one moment, but over a 2 or 3 year period. And once you reach that peak, there is no way to drive the price of oil down but for a significant decrease in demand. And even then, the difficulty in providing supply outstrips the diminished demand, and the price of oil continues to grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And that has a major impact, because your plastic comes from oil, flying planes, driving cars. So much of our modern day life is a function of having this cheap source of power, this cheap source of energy, which has permeated everything we do. So with that little refresher course on what peak oil is, The Guardian released some new WikiLeaks cables. Essentially, that the U.S., the United States government, fears that Saudi Arabia, the world's largest crude oil exporter, may not have enough reserves to prevent oil prices from escalating. In other words, they've reached peak. And by reserves, they're not talking about in big tanks. They're talking about under the ground. The cables from emissaries in Saudi Arabia back to Washington urge Washington to take seriously a warning from a senior Saudi government oil executive that the kingdom's crude oil reserves may have been overstated by as much as 300 billion barrels. In other words, 40%.
Hey, what happened? Wow.
Sadad al-Husseini, a geologist and former head of exploration at the Saudi oil monopoly Aramco, it sounds like he's like a guy who would know, met the U.S. Consul General in Riyadh in November of 2007 and told the U.S. diplomat that Aramco's 12.5 million barrel a day capacity needed to keep a lid on prices could not be reached. They couldn't generate 12.5 million barrels a day, because it was just too hard. According to the cables, which date between 2007 and 2009, Husseini said Saudi Arabia might reach an output of 12 million barrels a day in 10 years. In other words, they don't have the technology, or they haven't found the oil. But 12 million barrels a day in 10 years. But before then, possibly as early as 2012, global oil production would have hit its highest point. In other words, we can't get to where we need to get in the short term. Maybe in the long term we can do that, but it would be at an incredible expense. Husseini said at that point Aramco would not be able to stop the rise of global oil prices because the Saudi energy industry had overstated its recoverable reserves to spur foreign investment. In other words,
don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
Was not heeded. Aramco and the Saudis lied to get foreign investment, which apparently is the way that all business and financial transactions take place now around the world. You lie as to the value of a product and then sell it. And I will tell you this right now. There is one place where that does not exist. And you are listening to it, ladies and gentlemen. I undersell the value of the product you are listening to right now. So that you, I am playing an expectations game with you. You understand? Once you buy a Majority Report membership, the value of that membership so far exceeds what I have led you to believe it would be. But every day you wake up and the sun looks just a little bit brighter. The U.S. consul then told Washington, quote, while al-Husseini fundamentally contradicts the Aramco company line, in other words, he's whistleblown. He's telling us that Aramco lied. He is no doomsday theorist. His pedigree, experience, and outlook demand that his predictions be thoughtfully considered. In other words, he's not lying. He has nothing to gain from lying. Aramco has everything to gain from lying. In the last 2 years, other senior energy analysts have backed Husseini. Faith Birol, chief economist of the International Energy Agency, told The Guardian last year that conventional crude output could plateau in 2020, a development that was not good news for a world still heavily dependent on petroleum, I will say. So, two things to take away. One, WikiLeaks continues to be incredibly invaluable. Two, we're fucked. Hey, you know what? Maybe I should make an effort to not swear during the 40-minute podcast so that we can take the explicit thing off on iTunes. And the membership one will be explicit. Because a buddy of mine, you know, said, I started to listen in the car and I heard you swear. And I'm like, I only swear, like, literally, I don't even swear once a day, do I?
In day to day?
No, not day to day, on the show.
Oh. A little more than that.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Do I swear more than once a day on the show?
Yeah, I'd say maybe twice. I mean,
but I could keep swears out of
And it's not like it's, you know,
it helps us get syndicated.
I know, but you know, if you got a 7-year-old little kid in the car, you don't want them to hear that word. I don't know what word I'm talking about, but yeah, let me put it this way. You don't want to hear that word unless it comes out of your mouth. That's the way that we raise Milo. Only your daddy and mommy can swear. No one else's daddy and mommy, and you can't.
And none of those kids on the playground can ever swear.
That's right. I went to a parents' function last night, and it was sort of sad because we couldn't find a babysitter. And I think we couldn't find a babysitter. I'm not clear as to whether or not Nikki just didn't want to pay for a babysitter. So we had to switch off. So I went, and then left, and Nikki went. But one of Milo's friend's parents goes, your kid is so happy all the time. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, she's always smiling. I'm like, yeah, but you should see her, like, at the beginning and the end of the day. No, grouchy. Grouchy is all hell. Really grouchy. I had to tell her that your breath stank, Dorsey. And don't laugh, Evan, because I told her that your feet smelled.
God.
Well, she's like, you know, she's talking about how, like, I don't like blankety blank. I'm not going to say the kid's name because in case her parents are listening. Her breath smells. And I'm like, look, you got to deal with peoples who have bad breath all the time. You know, and you just don't say it. She goes, does Dorsey have bad breath? And I'm like, yes, he does. And I got to go in every day into that office. He's got bad breath.
I love that she's the one who brought Dorsey into it.
Of course. Well, that's like my school because I'm always telling her, like, today, you're going to go to work, and I'm going to go to school, because your school is more fun than my work. And then she said, what about Evan? Does he have bad breath? And I said, no, but his feet really smell bad. AOL System Messages sends me an email at, oh, wait. Oh, I got it. Majority FM, you are signed in to too many things. I get it. I'm happy now. I shared B-side idea with my son. He suggested flip side, less of a diminutive. You know, I think you're the second person to say that. And I like flip side. Members only flip side.
I can go with it.
Flip side for members only?
Yeah, just it reminds me of all my friends. I'll see you on the flip side, bro.
Well, that's what it's about.
There you go.
No? All right. Bravo-matic. Sam, new member. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Is that the case? Oh, well then, in that case, if you are a new member, what about this for you, sir? I just figured out how to IM on my BlackBerry. Sweet. I have two front row seats for one of Marc Maron's Atlanta shows in March. My wife said you can take her seat in exchange for a coffee mug. If not, send me a mouse pad and I'll give it to Maron. Ah! Yes, I will send you a mouse pad. When is this? Okay. Bravo-matic, you got to just send me an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com and just tell me what email you signed up for on the show, and I will send you two mouse pads. One for you guys, because I'm not going to be able to make it down to Atlanta. And let you, you know, take your wife. She doesn't like Maron, I can tell. Take your wife, and I will send you two mouse pads. One for you guys. Let me know if you want it signed. And one for Maron, which I'm going to sign for Maron. Thanks for doing my show, Sam Cedar.
Do you think Maron knows that we've named the microphone after him?
No, he doesn't know that. Oh, my God, though. You guys didn't see this. Donkey Ear, Don Quixote, Don Quixote. And we've got to put up an art page. Sent me one of the most disturbing images I've ever seen based on the Lindsey Graham microphone thing. It is, we will put it on the blog today. We've got to send it to Avant. It is the most disturbing thing. Like, I opened it up this morning at like 7:30 and I was just like, oh, God. The mic is, it's got Lindsey Graham's face on the front of it with a tongue sticking out. It's so disturbing. We'll put it on the blog at Majority of Four. A little hot in the music. Maybe it wasn't as bad with only voice. A better thank you, man. You rock, says Harold at 11:24. Superfunk 72, Marathon Man, the dentist scene. Yikes. That shit terrified me when I was a kid. Guess that means I'm old like you, Sammy. Just turned 39. Oh, Superfunk, you're not quite as old as I am. I know, I look very youthful. And I know it's not Friday, but I was at a premiere the other night. The film premiere. Brad Anderson's Vanishing on 7th Street.
Sure you don't want to save this? Are you going to have enough to go on Friday?
Well, I think I may have just blown my wad with that one right there. F not swearing, says Superfunk, but not F. Matthew, who replaces Webb? And do we hold the seat? Should we help to have Obama as top of ticket as he carried Virginia? Should help to have Obama on top of ticket as he carried Virginia in 08. Tim Kaine might replace him. I don't know. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be tricky to hold the seat. Tim Kaine might be able to do it, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. It's sad. I mean, it's sad. He must have been very disillusioned by the whole process. He got the new GI Bill passed, which was impressive. He made a legitimate push on prison reform, which, you know, I can't imagine is a hugely hot topic on the minds of voters in Virginia. And he hates, I think he just hates politics on some respects. I mean, it's too bad. It really is too bad. I don't know who's going to run. I haven't seen any names. But this could make it very difficult for the Dems to retain the Senate. I mean, it's going to be very difficult anyways, but I don't know. I haven't seen any names loaded. Maxercise, you studio may be stitched together, but you sound like you're 5'11". I am 5'11". I don't get it. Your studio. Oh, do people listen on Stitcher? They should listen on Stitcher to the show. It's easy. We got to get some more distribution on other channels too. We got to sit down and have a. You know what I think we're going to probably do is take a day off next week.
Do some sort of, technical work.
Technical work, all of it. Which means we should probably do a pre-taped interview. Just do an interview, extra interview or something like that. Heathen Steven, Beatles Yesterday was a B-side. Need non-PayPal donation method. Yes, working on that. That's another thing why we need time off. Hubbard, good portions of the Patriot Act were not renewed. I guess they'll just have to break the law and then not investigate. Not sure I follow with that. Tim Johnson. Hello, Sam, from Bangkok. Thailand and Cambodia continue their bloody skirmish on the border of the east, just where I am now. It's about 5 square mile prime tourist real estate. Is that the Golden Triangle? Surrounding the 11th century Khmer Hindu temple. In 1962, International Court awarded the temple site to Cambodia. However, a large area surrounding it was not addressed. Four soldiers were killed, many more being treated in a hospital near me, a near total information blackout on the matter here in Thailand. I haven't heard anything about it. Ban Ki-moon has requested a meeting of the Security Council. I've heard on the BBC. Poi, a girl living near the fighting, says artillery is being used, and the Thais seem to be getting the best of it. Ooh. Her family is seeking shelter from the fighting, and we are helping them. Wow. Although her father is staying behind to watch the pigs. God. Well, unbelievable. I don't think you're going to have anyone cheating on the hardship plea unless you have some covert teabagger or closet conservative in your audience. You know the liberals don't cheat. Not only appalling, the anti-abortion tax proposal, it's a slippery slope to Sharia law. I wish someone would point it out. Upbeat nihilist, sorry I couldn't wait to name drop Friday for this. Got my copy of A Bad Situationist yesterday. Thank you very much. And noticed that Stephen Colbert is in the deleted scenes on the bonus discs. The membership benefits keep rolling in. Have I not mentioned that Stephen Colbert was in the extras?
I don't think you have.
Oh, yeah. In A Bad Situationist, look, and I'm actually going to talk to a guy who's doing a documentary. I don't know if I'll be in the documentary, but he's doing a documentary on comedy after 9/11. And A Bad Situationist was an extremely difficult shoot because, I'll get into it later, but this is a good story for Name Drop Friday. You got to remind me, though. You may have to put it on a list. My wife produced A Bad Situationist, but she was not my wife at the time. She was my girlfriend, and I don't know what I was thinking. When I look back on this in retrospect, I don't know what I was thinking. We shot this in May, so we may have been dating for 6 or 7 months. 2001. May of 2001. And one of the people in the movie, one of the actors, was Sarah Silverman, who was a former girlfriend of mine. And at that time, she wasn't as former of a girlfriend as she is now. She's more former now. And I didn't think it was a big deal. I have been friends with all of most of my girlfriends in the past. Not all. But most, you know, and almost all I've been friendly with. But some I actually, you know, still am friends with. Well, two. But be that as it may, that created a very rocky situation on the set. Plus the fact that the shoot was very difficult. It was very low budget. And that was the second to last time Nikki and I ever worked together on anything. But aside from that, there was... I'm saying this because the more difficult a shoot is and everything that happened to the movie afterwards... not everything that happened to the movie. The movie was about Joe Lieberman's fictional son, who was a who was an idiot, and it was a character I had developed, you know, in the months before the run up to the election. Just coincidentally, he was from West Palm Beach, and he gets installed into an apartment in New York City. And tries to start an intellectual salon, and he gets inculcated by some radical Jewish Orthodox postal workers to commit a terrorist attack in New York City. And the movie ended with him on the roof with a bazooka. And the last scene, actually, the music I used was was Poupe, Quinon Fay. It was like the sort of the outro music, scratch track. So, needless to say, in the course of editing, when 9/11 happened, it completely... I didn't know what to do with the movie. It took me years to finish it. But one of the scenes in the first meeting of the intellectual salon, I just invited a bunch of comedians I knew to come and hang out and be bad intellectuals, essentially. And just a strange group of people. And it just didn't work out from the story perspective, and I was just, I didn't know what I was doing, and, you know. But Colbert was one of the guys. And in fact, I think I had actually boarded up. I had, you know, I had quite a bit of money at those days from sitcoms, and I had this nice sort of like unfinished apartment with big windows, bigger than these windows. But I had to block them all because I wanted to do all the shooting in there, and I had to hide it from the co-op building that I was actually shooting in there. And they had just installed, like, video cameras in the elevators just, like, the day before we started shooting. And so I had to pay off my doorman. I was like, dude, just don't tell anybody about all this shit, will you? And so we were shooting in, you know, it wasn't a one-bedroom apartment. We were shooting in the living room, but I had to put up cardboard on the walls. And I had already put up plexiglass with magnets to block out the sound as another way of blocking, because they were old windows. And one of those fell on Colbert. So I could have just, none of this, it's quite possible I could have just ended all this shit before it even began. Just killed him. See that? Upbeat nihilist for a majority. And if you become a Cedarista, you get two DVDs, two different ones.
Got a good suggestion for
Jay
Shivam,
Kig Hubbard. What?
Cedars Afterburn.
Cedars Afterburn? That sounds like something I'd have to go see the doctor about, right? Nefertiti, good time to discuss Reagan's legacy here. His role in bringing us back into the oil focus by ripping the solar panels off the White House and reversing Jimmy Carter's direction on alternative energy. Yes, that's true. We were making some real progress. They can be so stupid sometimes. Forgot to mention one other reason why Rush Limbaugh loves Reagan so much: racism. Did you catch Eugene Ruracki's Reagan doc? No. It's actually quite fair and balanced. Neither hit job nor fawning tribute.
Relating to today's guest, the film shows definitively that Reagan was told that Iran-Contra was explicitly legal, illegal, a felony, an impeachable offense. But Reagan didn't care, and he felt... Can you start a list? I would love to talk to him about that documentary.
I've got it, so I'll bring it in.
You do? Mm-hmm. Now, why aren't you doing that? Like, why aren't you looking around and saying, like, hey, this would be a good... Because I would love to have more film documentary guests.
I wasn't sure. He's making the rounds right now. I wasn't sure if you could get him.
I've interviewed Yuri Draki. What did he do? Didn't he do The Smartest Man in the Room? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I interviewed him twice.
I believe it. I just got the movie 2 days ago. I saw it in the offices.
Oh, you stole it?
No, I mean, it's a promotional thing. It's to get it out there.
You should be getting... We should bring a lot more of that shit in here, man.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
I can do that.
Put Draki on the guest list, please. I might have to move to Ithaca because of my wife's job, says Rusty Cole. Oh, I'm sorry. I do marketing. Is Ithaca nice, or am I going to hate it and be jobless for the rest of my life? Well, I've never been to Ithaca, but David Waterman has been. And I'm friendly with David Waterman. I don't know if you're going to be jobless. Hang in there, man. Oh, really? Wait a second. Matthew says, Ithaca is great, but cold. Good restaurants. Wait, did you... What's in Ithaca? What's in Ithaca?
There are colleges in Ithaca, aren't there?
Yeah. All hotel school students stay open restaurant. Oh, Cornell. Oh!
Yeah.
I didn't realize Cornell was in Ithaca. Huh. All the hotel school students stay in open restaurants. Oh, so there you go. Ithaca's great. It's great. I didn't realize. I thought it was in New Jersey.
Ithaca?
No, Cornell.
Nothing that good in New Jersey.
I had no idea. So there you go, Rusty. Great food. Beautiful. Do. Gravitune. Been offline for a bit. Any news about non-PayPal options, or do I just have to do it? Give me another couple of weeks. We'll come up with something. Maybe Google Checkout. Does that use PayPal, though?
I don't know. I think it might.
I think it is. Oh, you know, there's that Obu. I got to figure that out. There's some service where you can text payments to people. Obu. I have it. I just got to...
Obu? How do you spell it?
Maybe Obu.
Yeah.
Obo?
That's the Oklahoma Baptist
Oh Boy University. Or something like that? I have it somewhere. Trip, word of warning. You don't want to sit in the front row of a Marin show, especially with your wife. I like flip side. You tend to be a little flip. You can use the ROM one-finger salute as your logo. McAuliffe, Wilder, Perello are all mentioned for web seat. Ugh, yeah. Ugh. Isn't Wilder old? McAuliffe is McAuliffe. And Perello, is he a little bit anti-choice? What pictures? He is, isn't he?
I think so.
Plus the Yahtzee photos seemed... wait a second. Oh, Sam, what up? I'm a fan since MR1. Just subscribed as a majority reporter. And that is... the furthest that any $10 of mine has ever gone. I'm not sure I know what that means. I'm a VFX artist in L.A. Just finished 5 years with the company that did twin face replacements on Social Network. Oh, wow.
Cool.
Dude, who was telling us about that? Chris Rosen, right?
Yeah.
And Butts start a couple months at a VFX major out here. IA is trying to organize this, and the vast majority of artists I talk to have a knee-jerk reaction against it. That's the Yahtzee. Plus, the Ayatsi folks seem reluctant to set up an online presence. That's where they'll find all the VFX artists they want. VFX labor issues ain't Egypt, but the union has to plug in. No. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a problem with all institutions in some respects. That, you know, everybody, and, you know, I find, and maybe I just found this in show business more than because I was involved in it, but, like, any new technology scares the shit out of everybody. Unions, management, they all get scared because everybody gets comfortable with the way that they do things. And they're afraid that they're not going to be able to learn the new way of doing things, and the kids coming out of university are going to be able to. But you're right. I mean, I'm shocked. Like, SAG and AFTRA have been pretty good about getting online. Like, I can check all my stuff online with SAG and AFTRA. Thanks for joining, Wet Pictures. Shanksoft, we should have majority conference in the office. Yeah. Travoli, thanks for signing my mouse pad. Maybe I'll frame it.
Better than using it as a mouse pad.
Hey, what happened?
Sorry. I'm glad. I'm happy to. Happy to sign any of you, anything. Anything you want me to sign, I'll sign. Lucy, Daughter of Devil, is repeating on Cartoon Network. I finally get to see the first two episodes. Hilarious. Yeah, Lucy, Daughter of Devil was very good. I wonder if I actually get like an extra $32 for that or something. Janet, how are you? Will you try to get Olbermann as a guest? Yeah, I don't think he'll come on. I don't think he would do that. But I will try. I will try. Frankly, I'm very excited about the current TV thing. They get 23,000 viewers on average, but they're in 60 million homes. You realize that, like, on day one, Olbermann is going to increase their ratings by a multiple. I don't know. I don't know if he'll triple it, quadruple it, centuple it, diflepple it. He's gonna, and they're gonna create another sort of entity out there, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I'm very excited about it, and no corporate control. So, in other words, you can go on and say, like, "Hey, there's a real fucking problem with GE selling, owning all this media and selling war weapons." So I'm pretty psyched about the whole thing, and I would love to have him on as a guest, and I don't know. I don't know if he would come on. Someone just said David K. Johnson. Yes, actually, put him in the list, too. It's actually spelled David K-K-C-A-Y Johnson. I've had him on many times. Many times in the past. And he's from upstate, too. You should call the mic the Mark Maron 2. Wait, the Maron Mark 2. The Maron Mark 2. Yeah, that's like pretty good. No. Should get Harry Shearer on the show. Yeah, I think we have him on his list, right? Put him on the list if you could. It's tricky to get him to. I know he's a tricky guest. I hold Mark Maron at least partially responsible for the end of my last relationship. I listened to WTF in the first episode and tried to evangelize her. She said, "He's an asshole. If you like him, it makes me think you're an asshole, too." A few months later, we were done. Well, she doesn't sound very nice. I mean, just because you like to listen to a podcast, it shouldn't necessarily be like, unless it's something like How to Skin People or, you know, The Best Way to Cannibalize Your Neighbor or, you know. I would never hold it against somebody that they liked Maron. It would make me quite. I mean, I'm not talking in terms of his podcast. If they liked him personally, I would, you know, I would raise a question mark. I'm kidding, Mark, who's not listening anyways, who's just going to hear this secondhand and get all mad at me. Narcotu, the story about Bush being unable to travel to Switzerland was sad. I'm sure that he has friends there that he would like to visit. By friends, of course, I mean bank accounts holding his dirty money. Sam, I don't think you swear too much, but what the F do I know? One undone bird. Hi, Sam. Aren't Sarah and Nikki friends now? Yes, they are. Sarah was on NPR a while back, and she mentioned going to see her friends Sam and Nikki's house and giving their daughter some dress-up clothes. She said she liked to use it to be a prisoner. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'll save that story for Friday, too. Remind me of that story. Because I saw some people at Myla's dance class, and she's going, are you friends with Sarah Silverman? And then you hear that, and you're like, oh, God, please don't ask me to see if she'll do some charity benefit for you. I'm not her agent. She was talking about you today on... Yeah, that's a good story. Sarah's pretty cute with kids. Cool J146. Ithaca's really nice for a small city. Lots of hippies, huge farmers market, lots of local food, tons of gorges to swim in, awesome downtown with good restaurants and no major chain stores. Not sure how the job situation is. Also was wondering how much influence you have over what you read on the teleprompter when you're filled in at MSNBC. On one or two of the shows, had some influence on raising stories. Obviously the format of the show was sort of set in stone. The pacing of the show and the type of interviews they do, that was all set. But, for instance, I remember just off the top of my head one occasion where they were doing a story on Social Security or on something, and one of the producers had written into a piece, was framing the piece like, there are now 10,000 people retiring every day. What will this mean for Social Security? And I just said, look, it means nothing that we didn't know 20, 30 years ago for Social Security. We knew the baby boomers were going to retire. These people were not born at age 62. They were born at age zero. So we had 66 years to anticipate their retiring. And so all the numbers for the Social Security Trust Fund are not in any way implicated by the fact that it's all predicated on these numbers. And so they changed it. I had some. And as I did the show more often, I would have more because I would feel comfortable about this and they'd feel more confident with me and blah, blah, blah. What about a paid subscription for Flipside through iTunes? Well, you will be able to get an RSS feed that you will be able to plug in through your iTunes. So it will function. You will have to get it as a member. You will get a new feed that will be password protected with your own password. And once you get this feed, you will treat it like you did the old feed. That's all. It's just people won't be able to sign up for it through iTunes. You will have to come to the members only page to sign up for it. Because I don't think you can do that with any paid podcast. Sign up for it via iTunes. I live in Virginia. Probably be McAuliffe as the Dem candidate and George Allen running as a Republican. There's some other Tea Partier too. Okay, let's do a quick Super Funk. Laugh out loud, you almost killing Colbert. You should get David K. Johnson. Matthew, centrally isolated, says Matthew about Ithaca. Benevolent Smung, Michael C. Rupert has been giving me nightmares about peak oil for 10 years. Thoughts on him getting his guest? I got to check into that. Something about Rupert that things have made me... I'd be much more inclined to get Kunstler. Actually, I would love to get Kunstler. Good night, Tim Johnson. Morell, I remember reading some time back about how G.W. Bush and his daughter purchasing a large estate in Uruguay. I remember that. I think it was Paraguay. And there was speculation at the time, since there's no extradition treaty with that country, they might be planning ahead for the crap, but hitting the fan on their torture and rendition crimes. Very possible. I mean, if I had the money and I was George Bush, I would say, like, hey, it could be nice for a vacation if we go once a year. Nice to have that as a backup. See that Arianna Huffington's vowed to move to the center now that AOL owns HuffPo. Might create an avenue for Current TV to move into that space and start delivering online content as well. Well, I imagine that Current TV will be doing that. I mean, they're going to be nimble enough. It would be shocking for them not to. Let me say this about Ariana, and I need to read that more carefully. But I was having this argument with Tina Dupuy last night. Remember she came on that piece talking about we need a left wing Fox, and in some ways Current TV may be that. You know, not as not something that is lying and hypocritical, but something that is full throated and 24/7 maybe. She's saying she was very upset about Huffington, and I said, well, I always perceived this as sort of an inevitability and always sort of saw it in some respects as an inside-out type of situation. But, you know, guys like Sam Stein and Nico Pitney, and there's some very good reporters there who do some very good work. And she said, well, I don't like this where she says she's moving to the center. And I said, well, you know, what does Fox do? Fox says they're fair and balanced. They don't say that they're conservative. You want a right wing, you want a left wing Fox, then they should say we're at the center. Of course. And you know what? If I did, you know, if we could do Air America over again, I think it should have been branded as non-corporate and independent. Which is not to say, like, the individual hosts could not characterize themselves as liberal or shouldn't, and I think they should have. But the entity itself, I think it has value to simply sort of say, like, first of all, if Huffington Post doesn't change fundamentally what its political, the nature of its political reporting is, I have no problem with them branding it centrist, because basically it is. If you look on an issue by issue basis. And it means that if, you know, I don't want anybody to confuse Huffington Post with the left. So I don't care what she says about it. I care about how it reads. Which is not to say that I'm so sanguine on that either. But that's why I'm just not as concerned when someone says, like, you know, Kunstler lives not in Ithaca. He lives like near Woodstock. Harry is pushing his Nola Katrina film, so it might be a little easier. Yes, that would be good, actually. $10 in Santa Monica gets me a beer and a half, but with my subscription, I get a whole month of hard-hitting podcast. What pictures? So sweet! You're going to get another one just for that comment. Feed died. All right, well, good time for me to say goodbye. See you folks tomorrow. Tomorrow on this program, we will be welcoming to the program. Does anybody remember? Jamie Court from Consumer. What's today? Wednesday?
Today's Wednesday.
Consumer Watch. And maybe we might get a second guest on Egypt. Goodbye. No, it is good night. Auf Wiedersehen. Adieu. Are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive.